Welcome to the Lobot Lounge, the gathering place for the Gentlemen Nerds. The Gentlemen Nerds are three entertainment aficionados who know each other through various media endeavors, getting together to talk about all things nerdy, mostly in the vein of film, television, toys, and popular culture. Many topics are discussed, so please be warned, there are the potential for many spoilers. If you like what you hear, you can listen to past shows on iTunes or on our website, thegentlemannerds.com. And now, enjoy the show. And now we present okay, and now it's time for
that's fun.
Yeah, that's good.
Ben? Ben? It is a lawless time. Star Wars fans are being given a plethora of new entertainment and standalone films, very much like the expanded universe stories of old. Tonight, the Gentlemen Nerds are going to the outer rim of the galaxy and learning so much more about our favorite smuggler, the roguish scoundrel, the space pirate, Han Solo, and his first mate, Chewbacca. Tonight, the Gentlemen Nerds discuss Solo, a Star Wars story. Gathered here at the Lobot Lounge, as always, is Mark Finn.
It's not the years, honey, it's the mileage.
Aaron DiArrive.
I have a good feeling about this.
And I am Joseph Fotinos, your host and emotional touchstone for this, the Gentlemen Nerds. Welcome.
Hey, guys.
Yay.
Alrighty. Solo, solo, solo.
Oh, yeah. Fresh in my mind. Fresh in my mind. We saw it last night. So I am raring to go.
I gotta start with this, though. I mean, did anyone ever, did 8-year-old Mark or 10-year-old Aaron ever think we were going to see a Kessel Run movie?
No.
Yeah, not in my wildest dreams.
Yeah, right? Yeah. You're like, what? I mean, the Easter eggs and the fan service in this film are thick. It is thick. And we'll get into all the minutiae of the detail. But just overall, let's just cover our overall thoughts right off the bat. Like, you walked out of the theater and you thought, what, Mark Finn?
Wow. I don't hate things. That was my my initial takeaway was okay. I don't know if he stuck the landing, but he didn't screw the pooch.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's as good as we can hope for.
Sure, I like it. Aaron, what did you think? You guys walked out of the theater and you looked up at the moon in the sky and thought to yourself, self.
Very well done. I was incredibly entertained. My daughter, my 13-year-old daughter, is my barometer for Star Wars movies. And I looked at her and she smiled and she said, I really like this movie, Dad. And so I was like, yeah, okay, mission accomplished. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we dug it. We dug it.
I walked out entertained. My son thought, hey, that was a lot better than I thought it was going to be. But unfortunately, I had other people with me in the theater that walked out going, gosh, I wish I could have left. And we'll talk about that in general, but I think overall, yeah. And there's some very valid points that I'll bring up. But overall, I was entertained. I thought it was a little too much like check the box in a lot of ways. You know, we got to show that. Well, we got to talk about that. We got to do that. And it was very formulaic, which you can't get away from that sort of thing in a Star Wars film, especially with characters that we know what's going to happen to them. You know, right. So we're like, okay, we know this is going to happen, so let's just move this along. Overall, I enjoyed it. It was not my favorite thing in the world, but yeah, it wasn't. I don't want to burn Kathleen Kennedy in effigy. I'm not offended. I'm just like, huh, okay. Some of it seemed like things that do we really need to see? Okay, I'll just bring it right up. I think that the length of the movie was a little long. I think it could have been cut down a bit and told a better streamlined story. Example, the Cthulhu thing in the cloud thing that wasn't necessary. I think that whole part of that movie was like, okay, I get it. You're trying to make it exciting, but really you could have been trapped in there with the gravity force and take off the same way and everything could have been great, but why the tentacled thing? Anyway, I just thought it was too long. It was too long. And there was points in there that I thought, okay, let's move this along, folks. Let's move this along. But that was just me.
Yeah, although I will agree with that it could have been tightened. I mean, editing-wise, it could have been tightened. But no, I didn't really think there were scenes in there that were like, oh, why is this in here? I mean, the tentacle creature is a direct callback to the slug in the asteroid. I mean,
Which was more fan service, I thought. I want to see something original and not derivative.
But here's the thing. I mean, with Star Wars movies especially, and like you said, and you pointed that this is a very good cogent point to make. These are not new movies. These are not new films in the Star Wars universe. They are not. Rian Johnson's going to make some like that. But these are their purpose is not so much to surprise as to inform and entertain. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How did Han Solo become Han Solo? How did, you know, Boba Fett become Boba Fett? How all this kind of thing. So I don't mind if there's fan service there, because that's their point. That's the point of a movie like this. Now, if it's just fan service and the movie's dull, then it has failed. So it does need to entertain you still.
Sure.
But I don't need, you know, twists and turns and, you know, me going, wow, I totally didn't see that particular plot point coming. Yeah. No, it's Star Wars. It's Star Wars. Yeah. So with that in mind, I did not mind the beats in the story at all. Yeah. I can't think of anything that I rolled my eyes at and said, well, of course that happened. It's like, no, I mean, because I don't know how he made the Kessel Run. We've all been hearing about it since 1977. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure we've all had pictures in our head of what, like, well, okay, a parsec is a measurement of distance. So right. How does that work? And how do you, why is distance important? And so, they did it.
I love that it was such an obscure thing, really, because, you know, he does it in the movie. After he does it, he rounds down. And he brings it up, and nobody seems impressed. And if we flash forward to A New Hope, he's sitting in Mos Eisley. He tells Ben Kenobi and Luke Skywalker he made the Kessel Run in 12 standard parsecs, and they go, "Huh, great. The fuck is that?" You know, I mean, they don't seem impressed at all because they don't even know what it is.
Ben gives them a look like, "Oh, come on."
He gives them
a dubious look.
There's a moment. Almost an eye roll.
Yeah,
it is, but there's also a kind of a blank stare at him, you know, which is kind of, so I had this image in my head of Han, you know, for years walking around going, Han Solo, Kessel Run, 12 parsecs. And they go, what? You know, like he's dropping this amazing bit of information and they just look at him like, what?
Yeah.
It's an obscure thing that nobody seems to care about except Han Solo. And rightfully so, after we see what he had to go through to do this and what the hell he was doing. I thought it was inventive, the idea that he was doing what he was doing, why he was doing it. I liked his drive. The actor, let's talk about Solo himself.
I have always been a huge fan of Dennis Quaid. And I think that they did an amazing CGI job on him. Yeah. He looks like he's fresh off of Dream Quest. I mean, they really, Hollywood is doing some amazing CGI work these days.
I didn't mind him. As Elena pointed out, he has a nice smile. So obviously he was pushing her buttons and she liked him just fine. So I think he did a fine job. I mean,
It took me a while until he started mastering the smirk, which that didn't happen towards the end. You know,
right.
Where he started really getting that smirk.
There's a certain cavalier boyishness that he has that basically carries him through the movie. Yeah. And that first reel is a little tough because he's desperate and on the run. I mean, we see the edges of what will become this great hotshot pilot. But he's still young and sort of impressionable. It's really not until he starts. It's not until he has a scam he can get his fingers on under in the trenches that we start to see Han, you know, kind of take shape. But
much like Chris Pine, I think you said it, Aaron, much like Chris Pine in the Star Trek movie, he gets the mannerisms right. He's got the swagger. He's got the stance. He's got the physicality of Solo, I think, correct. And, you know, I've been saying this all weekend to people who've asked me, you know, directly what I think. He doesn't look like Harrison Ford, but neither do you two. You know, what does that mean? You know,
of course
he doesn't look like Harrison Ford because he's not Harrison Ford.
Right.
And we're going to have this problem going forward with when they decide to recast Indiana Jones and when they decide to, you know, start making these types of alterations. We've been spoiled, us Gen X kids, you know, in that we did not, you know, our first Bond was Roger Moore, and it felt weird when he became Timothy Dalton, but we didn't really watch those movies anyway. But there is a precedent for recasting people. Yeah. And it's only recently that there's been this sort of through line that we don't have to recast everybody because they're still young enough to play these characters. Well, that ship has sailed. Mm-hmm. Harrison Ford is 127 years old now.
Looks good for his age.
He does. He looks good. He, you know, Mark Hamill is 69. 74, something like that. They're all old. We're gonna have to. If you want more of these characters, Star Wars fans, you're gonna have to recast. End of discussion. That's it.
And still, the important part that I think maybe sometimes is missed by some fans is that he doesn't have to look and act like Harrison Ford. He needs to look and act like Han Solo.
Right.
And so I think that is key. By contrast, my jaw dropped open in the first scene with Lando, and I actually thought they had dubbed Donald Glover's dialogue with Billy Dee Williams. Like Billy Dee Williams sat down and did the dialogue and over Donald Glover mouthing it because he sounded exactly like Billy Dee Williams. Yeah. And I was like, holy cow, how did they do that?
We're gonna slather on the love for Donald Glover here in just a second, because I think we can all agree that his Lando was spot on.
But to jump back to Han, I think the actor was absolutely fine in the role. Would I go see more movies with him? Of course. Yeah, he was fine.
I enjoyed his predilection for finger acting, which is something that Harrison Ford does a lot. He talks with his fingers. Mm-hmm. He'll point and point and point. You know, you can run through the Star Wars and Indiana Jones and everything else. Get off my plane. Anything else he ever does, there's that finger. He's got that finger. Listen, Your Highness, I'm not in it for you. I can arrange that. His finger is a big part of Harrison Ford's acting, and Alden pulls that out a couple of times, which I thought was a nice touch. And Ron Howard probably obviously is a fan and knows the universe and knows what feels right. I trusted him and he didn't let me down. Right. You know, I think he had a lot to deal with. This was a troubled production. There was a lot of naysayers and rumors flying about because they had replaced the directors and it was a kind of a mess there at the beginning. And everyone thought, oh, this is going to be the first Star Wars film that's going to flop. With 4 years, we had, is it 4.5 years since we had four movies or something like that?
I mean, in 4 years, yeah.
We've had a plethora of movies. And I remember as a kid having to wait 3 years between movies. And boy, that was hell, especially mm-hmm. between Empire and Return of the Jedi. But now we're getting a little spoiled and some might say a little fatigued. And this is just my opinion, but watching Rogue One, great film, a lot of fun. Never want to see it again. I don't ever go, I want to see Rogue One. Let's pop that in. But I enjoyed it when I saw it. I don't know if it'll be the same with Solo. I don't know if I'm going to go, I think I want to watch Solo. As much as I go, I want to watch A New Hope or I want to watch Empire again because it's amazing and we love it. Right. Solo was entertaining, but will it bear repeat viewings? And I think if it does, it'll be because, oh, let's pick up that Easter egg. And oh, look in the background, it's so-and-so. And oh, look at that, they talked about that character. And what the hell is he doing here? We'll talk about that guy in a little bit. But you know, things like that, which I thought was were again more fan service, which
right.
It gets exhausting sometimes. Sometimes,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, no, again, absolutely. Is there fan service in this movie? Yes. Are you going to be disappointed if you go see a movie with fan service? Then don't see this movie. This movie was made specifically for fans of the original trilogy.
Yeah.
You know, this movie was not trying to take any chances, not trying to go somewhere we hadn't gone before, not trying to show us things we've never seen before. Mm-hmm. This was a movie made as a love letter and a money grabber for the original trilogy.
Well, I have a theory about this, and I don't have any hard evidence to back this up because, weirdly enough, Disney does not call me for consultations. I'm not sure why that is, but
that is weird. That is weird.
This is what I think, nay, strongly suspect to be true. I think that the interstitial Star Wars movies, the one-offs in between 7, 8, and 9 are little more than very well disguised test market movies. They're literally trying to see what kinds of movies Star Wars fans will accept. Yeah. And I think that's why the first one was war, in keeping with the Star Wars aspect of it. And this one was the star part of Star Wars, the wonder, the fun, the adventure. I suspect that Boba Fett will be their villain movie. But it may not be their villain movie. It may be the combination of war and roguery. Who knows? But they're already discussing Boba Fett and they're discussing
Obi-Wan.
Yeah. And so I think that it, as well as padding out the timeline, as we call it, they're going to want to make the jump to new movies. And this is a way for them because studios don't break new ground. Studios do the thing that they've already done. Mm-hmm. And so this is a way for them. These movies are a safe bet because it's characters we know and it's in between movies that we love. But tonally, these two movies have been very different, right? Rogue One and Solo don't open with the crawl. It still has a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, but it doesn't have the theme. It doesn't have, you know, there's a lot of touchstones missing from these, and that is intentional.
Yeah, no, you're right. Well, like I said at the beginning and the opening, they are very much like the expanded universe novels and comics that we used to enjoy for years. I mean, let's read that story, you know, in that short Star Wars story in that short collection of books that tells about how Boba Fett, you know, stubbed his toe one day or whatever. I mean, the expanded universe is a vast thing. And when Disney bought out Star Wars, they basically wiped it clean and said, nope. And fans frothed at the mouth and were uproarious upset. I loved the expanded universe, and some of those stories were quite good. Now, that doesn't mean I can't pick it up and read it and enjoy it anyway. It doesn't mean, you know. But so these are official, quote-unquote, official expanded universe stories. You want to see this? Yeah, we'll show it to you. We'll even pull some of the elements from these expanded universe stories that you guys love so much, saying that, you know, that Han and Leia's kid goes bad. Yeah, that's expanded universe stuff, folks. And they went, oh, yeah, we could use that. We'll use that. Yeah. That's good, you know?
Yeah.
So enjoy it while you got it, right?
And certain things make sense. I mean, you know, the people that were telling the expanded universe stories were extrapolating the way I'm sure the current filmmakers are. And yeah, if something makes sense, hey, you know what? Yeah, I think Han and Leia's kid should go bad, like you just said. Well, yeah, then let's do that. Let's do that as a plot point. But I do not mind if Disney continues to crank out. From now, you know, in 20 years from now, we're seeing, you know, a Star Wars droid story. You know, fine. I have no problems with any of that. See, that's the part I don't understand from fans is the anger. They're incensed. What? They're making a Boba Fett movie? How dare they? What are you talking about? They bought this franchise for billions of dollars. You bet they're going to make a fucking Boba Fett movie.
Yeah.
And an everything else movie.
If you could be a 10-year-old again in the midst of your Star Wars Kenner craze and you're having your own adventures in the backyard and you got Boba Fett and Walrus Man and you're hanging out with, Greedo and they're going adventures together, you're creating this in your head. Who wouldn't want that on the big screen? Because now they're going to give it to us. They're going to say, oh, watch this. You know, this is going to be great. You know, more Boba Fett. Oh, gosh. People have been hanging on to that guy for so long who's, let's face it, folks, essentially worthless. He really didn't do anything.
I have never understood. I will say for the record, I've never understood the fascination with Boba Fett. I think when he first appeared, we were hungry for anything about Star Wars. Exactly. And, ooh, how cool. Since then, we've had so many more different cool characters that we don't need Boba Fett anymore. It's like he's a guy in a...
Okay, you go to hell. You go to hell and you die. Because I need a Boba Fett movie.
Exactly.
Because I do.
It's going to be a double feature with Gonk, a Star Wars droid.
Let me tell you what the Boba Fett movie needs to start at the end of Return of the Jedi with the sail barge zooming off into the distance while everything else blows up around it. The skiff gets away with everybody on it. And literally, as the fiery debris rains down on Tatooine, we need to pan down to the Sarlacc pit to see Boba Fett's gloved hand coming up out of the Sarlacc mouth.
I actually like to see him in the Sarlacc stomach, floating in digestive fluid, and him saying, oh, crap.
then he
comes up with a clever way to escape.
If you guys are fans of Robot Chicken, and who is it? There's a whole... Breckenmeyer does an amazingly funny Boba Fett bit where he's in the Sarlacc with Weequay, one of the guards who fell in with him. They're just spending time chit-chatting, knitting, talking about things. Because, they're just doing stuff, And they're just like, because Boba Fett's telling them the story how he got in there. I took out like 50, 60 guys. And then Jabba was like, oh, this guy's too badass for me. I got to take him out. And I said, no, you know what? Screw you, thermodetonator. I'm jumping in myself. That's what I did. And then Weequay's like, oh, at least you didn't go like a bitch. And Boba Fett starts to cry. He's like, yeah, I went up like a badass.
Oh my God.
It's brilliant.
Jesus. Guys, there's going to be more Star Wars movies about everything imaginable.
Yeah, I'm just gonna say to the fans who are upset about this, it's so weird because all this stuff really comes down to what I hear when I see the complaints is they didn't make the movie I wanted them to make, screw you guys. And my thought on that is look, if you're tired of Star Wars, then be tired of Star Wars and don't go watch the movies. Yeah. No one's forcing you to.
There is a legitimate thing about just movies in general, and people can have their opinions on it, absolutely, and go, wow, that was long, and wow, that could have been cut, or I was bored, or I yawned, or, I drifted away there for a minute. I mean, if a movie's biggest sin is that it doesn't hold your attention, or it's not entertaining, or it's not, something that you want to see. If you're looking at your watch or, thinking about whether or not you have something in the oven at home, I think the movie is not doing well. Right. And this movie, to me, it walks the line. There are moments where I'm just like, can we move this along? I know they're going to get out of this. Can we move this along? I wasn't on the edge of my seat. Going back to the tentacle monster in the cloud, I was like, I know this is just, ooh, it's exciting. Isn't it exciting? It's so exciting. Yes, let's move it along. Let's move it along. Things like that I thought could have been better. Again, walked out of the theater going, pretty good. Your mileage may vary, folks.
Right.
As far as you feel about this.
But then there's that in that same cloud scene. Then there's that moment where, they do the plan, right? Oh, let's inject the doodad into the hyperdrive and ready, go. And then it goes, and it starts falling back. I genuinely went, oh, shit, what are they going to do now? So it's that, right? They give us what we expect in a surprising way.
Yeah.
See, that was so not, I mean, to me anyway, that was a callback to Empire. That even the sound effect was the same sound effect of the hyperdrive failing, you know?
Well, sure, but yeah. I thought it came at a time where, again, I'm not usually surprised by movies. I know pretty much every little plot twist they're going to do. That was a moment where I went, oh, you know, now what kind of thing? I never once did I think, oh, well, now they're going to get swallowed by the creature, the end. But I never think that of any movie. I don't go into any Marvel movie thinking, ooh, I think Black Panther's going to die. Yeah, it's like, no, except for
the surprise, he does.
Yeah. But, you know, surprise, he doesn't. They're going to bring him back.
Snapshot, so, baby.
Snapshot. Well, this is the thing that I mentioned. There's not really any stakes. You know, because we know how it's going to end up, you know, I mean, we know Han's arc. So you have to kind of fall back to the, ancillary characters for your, emotional, content not to put too fine a point on it. And here's where I think, screenwriter Lawrence Kasdan, knocked it out of the park by borrowing themes from film noir and also Westerns. For this movie, which is in both cases just perfect because it's a heist and it's a space Western. And so it's got all that stuff. Anyways, I mean, they rob a train for crying out loud. Can I get a witness?
Yeah.
But
yeah, that's straight out of, it reminded me of Firefly.
Right. But the scene from the scenes with Han and Kira, and specifically when she says, you know, I don't want to tell you everything I had to do to survive because you won't look at me the same way.
Right.
Man, that is straight out of film noir.
Yeah,
that is,
no, absolutely.
That's Casablanca. That's Out of the Past. That, you know, yeah. And so the notion that she is going to become the Red Dawn, or Crimson Dawn's lieutenant, sets this up for a second movie. And I want a second movie with these guys because while I think I would prefer this, the farther away Han gets from this main storyline, the Skywalker family timeline, the more interesting Han Solo is going to be, and the less predictable we're going to find it. They need to hold off on the Tatooine caper. That needs to be something that only happens. We never need to see the Tatooine caper. We don't need to see Jabba the Hutt. The end of the third movie needs to be, well, you've got your ship, you've got the money. Now what? I don't know. Go see about that Tatooine job, I guess. And then they go, yeah, nothing. You know, it's going to be a cake one. Relax. Trust me. And then he hits the hyperdrive and punches it. And then we're done. Because you see where I'm going with this, though?
I do. Yeah, but yeah. I got to say, you go to hell. You go to hell and you die. Because we need Jabba the Hutt. I want more Jabba the Hutt. I'm sorry. Right. I do.
Well, and you know what?
I really do.
And that's fine. I think the next movies can be all about all the various jobs he's done for Jabba.
Poor Jabba.
All the cool shenanigans and heists and all that kind of stuff. So no, yeah, I don't mind any of that. I mean, gosh, it's why does anyone go see a fucking Star Wars movie at this point? So you know, now we know that the Skywalker saga doesn't matter anymore. It's shit. You know, The Last Jedi buried it. It's done. Nobody fucking cares about the Skywalkers anymore.
Not everyone agrees with you, but just thought
of no. Okay.
For you.
Tell me for the next movie. Which Skywalker matters?
Princess Leia.
She's dead.
She's not dead.
No. The actress is dead. You think they're going to digitally recreate her?
Maybe.
She's there.
Okay.
Peter Cushing was dead, but they digitally recreated him for her.
I rest my case.
There's no case to rest. Saga, I still care over about these characters. And the Skywalker saga is not over because what about, what's his name? Guy who wore a mask and was a pouty boy. What's his name? The guy that everyone seems to like. The
Kylo Ren.
Yeah, that guy. The guy with a huge torso and no shirt. That guy. You know, I'm interested. I care about those characters. I really do. And it's certainly not anything against, you know, the Skywalker clan in that story. What I liked about Last Jedi, and I don't want to get to turn this into a Last Jedi thing, but I do like the idea that the Force was everywhere and anyone could be part of the Force. And that's the Skywalker saga. It's not generations and family lineage, yeah, and midichlorians.
God knows Lucas didn't already establish that in the prequels where there were hundreds of Jedi.
But you had to have the right midichlorians first.
Nothing new was told in The Last Jedi. Let's just settle this. I raise
you midichlorians.
I'm going to split the difference between the two of you. I do want that ninth movie. I want that ninth movie because I suspect the only thing left to really do is to hand it off to the children of the Force. Like and the children of the Force are going to be the ones to fix the mistakes of the fathers. Yeah. And that's a good message of hope to go out on. But also, what's going to happen is that ninth movie is going to come out, and whether they like it or whether they don't like it, fans are going to go, well, finally. You know what would be great is if they do some new Star Wars movies. And so that's just how fans are. They're myopic and weird. So I want that ninth movie to be the other shoe dropping so that we can move on with ourselves.
Yeah. That is true. Yes. I do want the ninth movie to come and go so that we can say, done. And by the way, less people think that my vitriol towards The Last Jedi is vitriol towards Rian Johnson. It's not. I'm really looking forward to Rian Johnson's new original, has nothing to do with the Skywalker's trilogy. Right. I want to see what that guy does in the Star Wars universe. I'm fine with that. I'm just saying that as a wrap-up to the saga of the Skywalkers, and if anybody is just silly enough to say, well, those movies aren't really the saga of the Skywalker. Yeah, shut the fuck up. They are. It's the saga of the Skywalkers. Lucas has said that multiple times. We see that in the prequels. We see it in the original. We clearly were starting to see that in the sequels. So let's wrap up the saga of the Skywalkers, and then let's move on. Right. Because we have spinoffs, right? We have spinoffs to show, man, I miss Han. Well, guess what? There's going to be a whole bunch of Han movies. Or, man, I miss Lando. Okay, there's going to be a bunch of Lando movies, you know? So I just think that's it, guys. People are ready for new Star Wars stories, for different Star Wars stories that don't have any of the legacy characters, that are not just fan service,
right?
Aren't just filled with Easter eggs for all the other cool stuff. Yeah. They're ready for completely new stories on completely new planets with completely new characters.
I don't know if that'll work. There has to be some link, I think, for people to go, it's a Star Wars movie. If you, I point to this, and this is just me because, you know, horror, you know, spooky stuff.
Right.
Halloween, the original Halloween, great story. Michael Myers escapes from Smith's Grove, Dr. Loomis. Okay, Halloween 2. Kill that SOB, blow him up in a hospital, shoot him in the head twice. He's dead. He burns up. Halloween 3, completely new story, completely new stories, completely new stories. Oh my God, it's going to be great. And the fans went, where's Michael Myers? Screw this. This is horrible.
Well,
I think Star Wars fans, if anything, are even more rabidly against that sort of change, even though they say they're not.
I would point to the success of Rebels as to say you're wrong.
But Rebels has Darth Vader. Rebels has
But he's not one of the main characters.
Princess Leia. But there's links. You gotta. You can't have a.
Oh, sure, sure. No, yeah, no. But yeah. there's links in a Han Solo movie, in a prequel.
Because the
Emperor's there. You know, Darth Vader's running around somewhere.
This is fun. Easter egg time. Let's kind of go through this because they did do some nice mentions, some nice stuff. You know that I enjoyed. In the Star Wars, in Solo, a Star Wars story, they talk about, and this is just lip service, folks, but they mention Bosk, the bounty hunter. How come you couldn't hire Bosk?
They
nice little drop there. Woody Harrelson's character, Beckett, they say, oh, you killed Ara Singh. Ara Singh? Yep. Yep. And it was just a throwaway line, but Ara Singh was a bounty hunter who, if you watch very carefully, in Phantom Menace, she's there watching the pod race, but she also shows up in the animated Clone Wars series and trained one of the people who trained Boba Fett. Was a bounty hunter of the day and things like that. Yeah. That I really kind of liked was like,
oh yeah,
they do that, you know.
talk about the ultimate Easter egg is who runs the Crimson. Oh my God. I mean, that I was not expecting that. I mean, and I should have, because I've seen the Clone Wars, all of the Clone Wars, and I know that he does take over the Syndicate, but it just never occurred to me that, oh yeah, they're going to pull Darth Maul out of that. I was like, holy cow.
Robotic legs and all.
Yeah. My daughter's looking at me like, Dad, that's Darth Maul. I'm like, yeah, that's Darth Maul. Wow.
My employees who were watching the film with me, they're prequel kids. They grew up, that was their first Star Wars movie. Yeah. I watched them, their heads snapped back on their necks like Pez dispensers when he appeared. They lost their minds. Yeah. It was not unlike, you know, like for us seeing Darth Vader come out of the shadows, you know, it's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
They were kind enough to give me the complicated and convoluted series of events that allowed Darth Maul to come back and survive being cut in half. So, you know,
it's really, when you think about it.
I said that out loud. It sounds really dumb, but yeah, it was. That was great.
You mentioned the planet Dathomir too. In that
conversation. Did. Yeah, he said, come meet me on Dathomir. Yeah,
and that was where the Night Sisters are, and that's where he and his brother were taken from when they were children, and all that stuff. Yeah, it's all very, very deep cuts, which go over most people's heads. I mean, people that I was in the movie with went, who was that again? And I'm like, okay, come on. Really? Because here's the thing about Solo. And I went into it saying, the very beginning, I said, God, please don't let there be one lightsaber. I don't want one friggin' lightsaber in this movie. So here's Darth Maul sitting in his chair, looking very much like Darth Maul, because, you know, it's still, Ray Park. And the voice was still, you know, whoever did the voice for Darth Maul, because it wasn't Ray Park, it was Sam Whitwer, who does the voice for Darth Maul.
So they did get Ray Park to come back in.
Yeah, it was Ray Park.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
Nice.
So, you know, and he was older, you could tell, he's aged a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
And it's kind of, okay, Darth Maul. And he says, oh, by the way, to the fans out there, in case you're wondering, Luke, I still got the double lightsaber. And I'm going to turn it on for this hologram. Isn't that cool? It was, that's unnecessary.
It was totally unnecessary, but at the same time, just for those of you in the audience who weren't paying attention, I thought maybe it's another member of the same race. No, it's Darth fucking Maul.
It's Darth Maul.
Yeah.
And he stands up, and you very clearly see his robotic legs, which, again, if you're not looking for his legs, if you're staring at his face, you don't see them. Is it that terribly important? No, it really isn't, but it's nice to fill those gaps and tie it together, because really, think about it. We're tying prequels to the original trilogy. Ultimately, in that one moment where Darth Maul shows up and talks to a character that interacts with Han Solo, you know?
Yeah, no. I thought that was, I love that. I thought that was very well done. And the other thing too, is that, you know, Mark talked earlier about, you know, characters that we care about. I think this is key. This is why this movie was a success, because I cared about those characters. I cared about Chewie, cared about Han. I cared about Lando. I cared about the girlfriend, Kira. I cared about them. I bought the romance between Han Solo and was Kira, was that her name? Kira?
Kira.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh. Between Han and Kira. It worked. I love how Han and Chewie meet. Again, that's one of those moments every fan has wondered, how did those two meet?
I remember reading that somewhere, that he helped him escape, like, slavery, or he was in capture or something like that.
Right. He was.
That's canon. Yeah. It was unofficial canon, but everyone knew that Solo got him out of some kind of situation like that. They escaped something.
But I love, you know, talking about, like, hey, well, just, you know, fan service doing. It was the Rancor pit, except it had Chewie in it. And it was awesome because of that. They drop him down. Here comes the beast. I know we've seen this before. Oh, my God. Is it a Rancor? What is it? And then Chewbacca comes staggering out. And the guards on top were talking about, yeah, you know, I wonder if he's going to eat this one, too. And I'm like, oh, my God, a carnivorous Wookiee. That's awesome. I never realized that, you know, Chewbacca doesn't think much about eating people. He's like, sure, they're tasty.
Speaking of the Rancor, because you brought it up, Clint Howard, Ron Howard's brother, appears in this film.
Yes.
As sort of a referee, a fight guy, making droids battle each other.
He's a fight promoter. Yeah.
Yeah, fight promoter. And L337, you know, gets in his face about robot rights and all that stuff. Right. Clint Howard plays a character named Ralakili, and Ralakili is the name of the Rancor Keeper in Jabba's Palace.
Oh, that's funny. I did not know that.
Could Ralakili had left this particular job and somehow found his way to Tatooine to become the official Rancor Keeper? He put on about, 200 pounds and stays down there with the Rancor.
Working for Jabba's lucrative. Yeah.
I think that's awesome.
And then, by the way, what I've heard is the Warwick Davis character is supposed to be the same guy that was on Tatooine, the same character in the prequels, and now he is joined with this band.
Yeah.
Talk about things that surprised us. I could not have told you, hey, that main pirate leader is going to take off his helmet. It's going to be a young freckled girl. Right. I could not have predicted that is what we were going to be, shown, or that was going to be the reveal.
Yeah.
So I don't want to make it seem like there were no surprises in this. There were some genuine surprises where I was like, oh wow, I did not see that coming. And the movie has those moments where you're wondering how exactly, like when Han walks in there and then hands him the fuel, and the guy's like, it looks just like it, doesn't it? And I went, oh yeah, of course, yeah, the switcheroo. He somehow got fake fuel. Mm-hmm. No, psych, it's the real fuel. Right. And then you're like, what? Wait, what? It's the double of the double of the double cross,
right.
You know?
Yeah.
And again, that was surprising. Right.
I wanted more things like that. Yes,
right.
Yeah. Less tentacle monsters in space.
Han shot first. I love it.
Yeah. Well,
Paul Bettany was amazing.
Yes.
He's a charismatic guy anyways. Yeah. And, the last four films he's been in, he's played a very stiff android or a robot voice. And so it was really nice to see him get to uncork.
I love Paul Bettany, and I agree that character was. I was almost disappointed that they killed him.
Right.
But no, he was great. Those scars on his face and such. I mean,
that would change color. That would get darker red as he got angrier.
That's awesome.
The facial markings would get red. His eyes would get red, and then when he was calm, he would go back to normal. You still see the scars, but they weren't as red. So yeah, I don't know what race he was.
Right. Because when he died, he turned like an ashen gray.
Right.
Yeah,
Dryden Voss. Dryden Voss was the character he played.
What a great character! And yep. I mean, Bettany's fantastic. Yeah.
Speaking of fantastic, let's talk about Lando Calrissian for a bit.
Oh my god!
Because really,
I wanted to learn Sabacc. Excuse me, I pronounced it wrong. It's Sabacc.
It's Han.
I love that. I love that. That it was a nice reference to how Billy Dee Williams kept saying, Han.
Yeah. The Glover knocked it out of the park, and there's a small group of people complaining that they didn't like that Lando cheats at cards, and I disagree with this because. When we first meet Lando, before we even meet him, when Han is telling Leia about him, he says gambler.
Yeah.
And because this is a space Western, I think people don't realize that gamblers frequently used that device is called a holdout. Yeah. And so there's no reason to think that a professional gambler wouldn't have one on it.
Yeah. I would have been disappointed if he hadn't cheated.
Right.
It's like, of course he cheated. This is Lando, he's all about image. It's all about image for him.
Mm-hmm.
It's not important how he wins. It's important that he wins.
Right.
So no, it was, oh my gosh, it was, his entrance, the first scene when Han walks in there and he's holding court at the Sabacc table and he's talking, I could have sworn Billy Dee Williams just dubbed those lines for him. my jaw dropped. I was like, how did Glover do that? So hats off, Donald, you nailed it. Wow.
Yeah.
No, and made a character that we all can recognize as Lando Calrissian, but it also gave him some unique and original aspects to his character.
Yes.
He doesn't have any problem saving his own skin and leaving, which he does very, very clearly. And he doesn't come back the last minute. Yeehaw!
No, that was wonderful.
He's gone.
He just ditched them.
Yep, he's like, I'm out. You know,
later.
Exactly. You know, so, and then of course the fan service replay again in reverse, though, when Solo sees him again and comes up and pretends to punch him, and then he hugs him, and it, very much like their first meeting on Cloud City, they do that again. But he
unloads the holdout.
Yeah.
It's a quick scene. It's a quick cut. If you blink, you miss it. But he spots the card in his sleeve, and that elaborate hug fake out was all designed to pull the card out of his sleeve while he was distracted. Genius.
Nicely done. But ultimately, what I think Lando Calrissian does for us, because it is Solo, a Star Wars story, and it's an origin of Han Solo and Chewbacca. It's also an origin of the Millennium Falcon. And I want to point to that ship here for a minute, one of the most, if not the most, iconic ship in the Star Wars universe.
Yep.
That the Falcon starts out looking a little different at the beginning of this film and ends up looking very much like the Falcon we kind of know. There's reasons for it in the film. I'm not going to go into the details of it, but there are reasons for it. But what I do like is that in Empire Strikes Back, C-3PO plugs into the Millennium Falcon and says, "Sir, your ship speaks a very unusual language, unlike I've ever heard before." And we know why now. We know why the ship is so unique and why it has a very distinct voice, the voice of Phoebe Waller-Bridge, if you really want the truth of it. But the truth is that computer, that system, is a sentient robot. That did Lando really care that much for? Obviously, he did. He loved that ship and loved it even more because I suppose now that's the only place where L337 is in the Millennium Falcon. She's part of the ship. He even says it. She's part of the ship now. You know. So the Millennium Falcon is an amalgamation. It's pulled together from so many different sources and adventures. The brain is different. The hyperdrive is different. The front of the ship is different. The guns are different. But it's the Millennium Falcon we all know and love. And now take it back to when Luke Skywalker in The Last Jedi, sorry, Aaron, walks into the Falcon after learning of Han's death, and we get that kind of sad moment, and he takes the dice. Oh, those dice, you know, play a huge part in this film as well. They tie it together. They do tie it together.
They do.
It was nice. It was good to see some of that development. I liked that when the Falcon appears, it does look different. That's a fun bit. But I think what I like best of all is after the Kessel Run, when the two of them are standing next to each other and they're looking at his ship, and Han could not be more proud.
Yeah.
You know? Yes. And Lando says, "I hate you." And he says, "I know." and then not 5 minutes later, Han is trying to bluff his way out, and we just see the ship just take off. I just love it.
Yeah. And that's also why then in Star Wars, the first Star Wars, when he walks in and sees the Millennium Falcon and it's beat to shit, he says, "What a hunk of junk."
Right.
It's like one of those things. We know that Han has made modifications to perhaps the performance of the Falcon, but not so much about the appearance. It's still got holes and gaps, and it's scuffed and bent and crunched. And it's like, okay. So, to show us how the Millennium Falcon achieved its particular appearance in A New Hope, well, we saw that. We saw exactly why. Because it's a much cleaner, nicer-looking ship when Lando has it. So
I would be very surprised if we don't get a sequel. The problem is I don't think we're going to see that sequel before 2021. But there is a possibility. Now, I don't think this is a good idea. There is a possibility that they could start doubling up on Star Wars movies a la Marvel Studios.
Right.
I want to caution them against it. I think one a year
is spoiling us already. And it's a largely indifferent and ungrateful group of people you're trying to appease. So one a year is enough, because it one a year keeps it in the realm of an event.
Right.
And especially if right now they're concentrating on these characters that we know now.
Right. Well, there's Disney's talking about a TV show as well. I mean,
there was talking about that.
We're only going to see more and more and more Star Wars stuff, guys. We're going to see animated stuff. We're going to see live action TV shows. We're going to, because I mean, they're doing it. They're launching a streaming service. You know, everybody's going to have a streaming service in the future. I wonder what's going to happen to just regular television. But anyway, streaming service. And so they need material. Well, gosh, this is the company that owns Marvel and Star Wars, so they can have there's can be room for a lot of material that they will offer exclusively on their streaming service.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, we may get a Werewolf by Night TV series, guys. Finally get a Werewolf by Night. We can get a Moon Knight TV series. We can get all of these obscure Marvel characters that they're not doing anything with and we will never see in the movies. Well, guess what? They are tailor-made for a TV show. I said that with Star Wars. Same thing with Star Wars. We will see a Bounty Hunter Star Wars TV show. We will see it's inevitable. It's inevitable.
I want to caution against oversaturation, though. I think that there is, like Mark said, you want to give some space and breathing room, because I don't want to have Star Wars fatigue like I had superhero fatigue not too long ago, which might be a thing. You know, I like, God knows, I loved Star Wars. It was the lifeblood of my childhood. And I walked into this movie not bouncing off the walls. I walked into this movie going, oh, okay, let's go. You know, the little trepidation. I hope we don't mess this up and please be good. And, you know, my younger self wouldn't have cared, obviously, because I was a kid and I didn't have refined taste as I do now, obviously. But, walking out of the theater, though, I was like, okay, that wasn't bad. It wasn't bad.
And let me tell you that it does. I've seen it twice and I enjoyed it more the second time. Mm-hmm. And I think I enjoyed it more the second time because I knew what was coming. So I was able to sort of relax and really watch it rather than just sort of like try to absorb it as much as I could. I still have that pattern with Star Wars movies where I have to watch it all, you know, and I can't like it because I'm too busy watching it. Well, the second time I was able to like it and I laughed more and chuckled more and there was more, there was a lot more to like the second time through. Yeah, so
I suspect it would be the same thing for me. I'm catching up in my first viewing, same as you, Mark. So
yeah.
I'm actually looking forward to seeing it again so that I can catch more of the nuance. I can pay more attention to how this guy's playing Han Solo and, you know, that kind of stuff. And we've only mentioned a few of the Easter eggs. They are all over this movie. I was entertained. I mean, maybe it helps to keep, I know it helps to keep expectations low and mine were, and I had, again, I had very few requirements. My requirement was that they be true to the characters that we have come to know and love and that I be entertained. That's it. That's the only two things that I required. And I got both of those. So
The Obi-Wan Kenobi standalone movie that they have announced, as well as the Boba Fett movie. But the Obi-Wan Kenobi standalone movie interests me more than Boba Fett does, frankly, because it's Boba Fett. But anyway, I'm assuming they're going to do it and set it for after Revenge of the Sith and before A New Hope. That's the only thing that makes any sense. It has to.
Yes, right. You know. Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So in that time frame, Kenobi basically was on Tatooine watching Luke.
Right.
So, and I'm wondering what they're going to go, you know, what, where they're going to go with this. Is he going to be Obi doesn't call you back in the morning Kenobi and just going to be hitting Mos Eisley every weekend while he's waiting there watching Luke and just kind of hanging back and doing his thing? Or, and this was what I thought the minute I saw Darth Maul, I went, ooh, rematch. Because now they've opened it up to the potential of these two characters running into each other again.
Do you watch Rebels?
Yes.
Okay. It happened. It's happened.
Yeah, but wouldn't it be nice to see it on a screen?
It would.
Like where are they going to go with the Kenobi story? What, you know, we'll have to find out, obviously. But I would love to see Ray Park as Darth Maul with robotic legs going against, is it Ewan McGregor? I hope it is, but who knows? As Kenobi.
And by the way, you could even go even further to start exploring much more, because again, this whole time Yoda's hanging out on Dagobah. So yeah. What's he doing? Just picking mushrooms and making stews? No, he's probably communicating with Obi-Wan, and they're coordinating stuff, and they're, you know,
and Qui-Gon. Yes,
right. And Qui-Gon. Right. So no, I do think, and milking sea cows.
Right.
I really do think that we are going to be shown more of that. What were the Jedi doing from the time that Revenge of the Sith happened to the time that A New Hope begins? I cannot imagine that all of them are sitting around milking a different alien creature and going fishing.
And sea snake milk, good it
exactly.
is.
And then wondering, like, well, I wonder when it's going to be time to do something.
This is why I would very much like them to do something that they have never done before. I think the next trilogy of movies, and they need to make them so that they come out 1 year apart, so that we don't lose the narrative thread. But the next trilogy of movies needs to go back 1,000 years to the Old Republic, and it needs to show us how the Sith formed and broke away from the Jedi, because that is something that we know happened, but we have no details on it. And that would be a really cool thing to do, because if you go back 1,000 years, you don't have to mention Skywalkers. You don't have to mention Kenobis. They can be other Jedi, and other Jedi 1,000 years ago is a wave. You can't even like go, well, we'll just dial the TIE fighters back. No, they're not using TIE fighters. You know what I mean? Like, it's got to be other stuff. It's going to be different ships. There isn't an empire. In fact, the whole thing is essentially, it's about the Jedi as the peacekeeping agency and realizing that they've got a mole in the works. You know, there's a lot of ways you could do it, but it would be, there's your familiar Joseph Jedi Knights. We know, and an army of them. That's cool, because that was one thing that we always liked, but having the Sith show up, that also helps with the stories to come.
Yeah.
And it has the advantage of being, other than the emotional, like, these are characters we have to care about, we don't bring any baggage to that. You know what I mean? There's no, well, you got to make sure that this happens, otherwise the movies can't occur. And you got to make sure that these droids have their memories wiped. No, none of that has to happen. It's 1,000 years ago.
I mean, come on. It would stun me if there was no TV series or series of movies in the future that did not concentrate on Jedi. I mean, we would all be stunned if Velcro, no, that's it, we're done, we washed our hands after the Kylo story's over, the end, no more Jedi, let's do Star Wars. You can't, you have to have a Jedi story. So I agree with you, Mark. I think an Old Republic set of movies or TV show would be great.
I still haven't got my wish. I still don't have a single Star Wars movie that doesn't have a single lightsaber in it. I'm hoping the Boba Fett movie has no lightsabers. I want a movie with no lightsabers. Just one movie, no lightsabers at all. We know they exist. We don't have to show them every single time. But that's just me. Hey,
yeah, but lightsabers are cool.
Yeah. Oh God. Yes.
Come on.
So I really wanted to say this towards the end, because this was my favorite part of the movie.
Okay.
It absolutely was, and that was the relationship between Han Solo and Chewbacca.
Oh, yeah.
Chewbacca does so much more in this film, from learning to play digital chess to ripping somebody's arms out of their socket.
Yes!
He finally did it. And just being an amazing character, an amazingly in-depth character that I just adored. I loved his, I gotta help these Wookiees over here, man. I can't stay with you. I gotta do this thing, you know. Or showing up at the end and putting his arm on Han and having that bonding there. And Han apparently knows how to speak a little bit of Wookiee, which was kind of interesting. And it saved his ass, how it managed to calm the situation down. But I loved watching Han Solo and Chewbacca together for the first time, quote unquote, again. And my heart soared in this one part of the movie where Kira was sitting in the co-pilot seat, and Chewie obviously knew what to do, and Han realized that he knew what to do, and Kira said, "Chewie, take this seat. And the minute he sat down and the music swelled, and there they were in their proper place, looking at each other, glancing at each other, you know, working together as a cohesive, seamless team. That was Han Solo and Chewbacca. That was what I wanted. That was my favorite part of that movie.
Everything about Chewie, from the introduction of how he met to how they bonded. I mean, you know, and I, again, I've read some complaints about, you know, oh, it's so dumb. Why was Han, you know, Han wouldn't have been talking like a Wookiee. He just would have been speaking in English and understanding. No. He had to. He had to show this guy, look, I've gone through the trouble of learning your language, right? Don't eat me. Okay, good. And it was funny. It was funny.
Yeah. It also was a way for him to talk to Chewbacca without the guards hearing.
Right.
And that's the important thing.
I even love the translation was like something out of an anime film. It was great. You know, we bend together, upward fight or something. It was like the subtitles were awesome. And I'm just like, okay, Chewie got the gist.
Right. Enough to spare him. Speaking of Wookiees, man, some of those Wookiees that were on Kessel, they were weird looking. They were some weird looking Wookiees.
Slavery's hard, man.
I get it. I thought I was looking at Lumpy from the Star Wars Christmas special.
That is who
for
they
second.
Look like. That is.
I was like, ooh, Chewie's a handsome man. If this is a general Wookiee right here.
Absolutely. No. He is considered one of the better looking ones. They all look like shriveled prunes. It was really. Yeah. But again, I saw that as they've been enslaved for a long time. Yeah. They've been mistreated for a long time. They probably have all kinds of skin diseases and mange, so they're not as hairy or whatever. But they did look weird.
Yeah, there was those little pieces were wonderful because Chewbacca has always been one of my favorite characters because he's fascinating. And I mean, let's face it, he is the really well trained dog that can fly a spaceship, and so it was really cool. This is one of the best things about Lawrence Kasdan. Kasdan has got. He understands that you world build in Star Wars by suggesting rather than explaining. And so, you know, it's just a throwaway line of dialogue. The Empire enslaved Kashyyyki, you know, and took them all hostage. It's boop, boop, like that, you know, but that explains why he was in the pit. It explains why we see the Wookiee in the mine. It explains why Chewbacca goes to help him. You know, that one line of dialogue unlocks a couple of minor plots in the movie that matter. And so I really, the thing that I want more, I don't know what the takeaway is going to be over at Disney, but I hope that when they are talking about doing the second Solo movie, that they go back to Kasdan. Kasdan needs to go ahead and write if there's only going to be two, he needs to write them both. If there's going to be three, he needs to write all three because he understands these characters and he's the guy I trust to keep putting those film noir touches and those Wild West touches in there. I don't think that a younger filmmaker would do that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's what this needs. It needs those throwbacks. I've already seen one fan poster that someone posted online that is a close up of Han's hip from a Worm's Eye perspective and Woody Harrelson indistinct down the way. And that's the classic Sergio Leone, you know, gunfighter stepping into frame pose. Well, that poster captures the emotional core of that movie, you know, in a way that the ads now I haven't. Now I really like the posters for this film because they're very evocative and certainly harken back to Style D for the original Star Wars poster, which was supposed to look like a circus poster on a wooden fence. These have that feel to it as well. And so I think that all comes out of this being not a traditional story, but rather a timeless story. Yeah. You know, boy meets girl, boy loses girl, girl becomes second in command for a criminal enterprise. Boy gets his own spaceship and comes back to rescue her only to find out that she doesn't need to be rescued. You know, there's great themes there. And the movie
If any of you guys have been on the fence about it, if any of our audience has been on the fence about it, and we've totally spoiled the entire film for you, go watch it. because it's great. I didn't want this. I didn't need it. But if it's inevitable anyways, if they're going to keep making Star Wars movies, whether or not I have a put in, which I don't, they need to be entertaining. They need to be fun. They need to bring something new to the table. And this movie does all of that very handily. So that's my takeaway.
Agreed. I must insist that fans of the original trilogy give this a shot. Don't listen to the reviews. Don't listen to the fanboy vitriol. Go see Solo. If you love the original trilogy, go see Solo. Judge for yourselves. I think you will be pleasantly surprised.
Totally.
But do temper your expectations, because it is...
I think that's true of everything. It is
heavy on the fan service, and it does seem a little workmanlike in some areas. There are some high points. There are some really, really good moments. There are some moments that you may find tiring and may find repetitive, and that's okay. It is derivative. Of course it is. It's Star Wars. But as long as you can have that in your head and enjoy it on that level, I think you'll be okay. Now, just don't go in expecting to be 7 years old again, unless you actually are seven and you're listening to this podcast. And if so, shame on your parents.
Yeah, really. What were they thinking?
We have potty mouths. Situations. If I'm judging on my 13-year-old's reaction to this movie, It was enthusiastic. She was smiling. She was laughing. She was talking about it. She says, "I love Chewbacca." I mean, she walked out of this movie in a mood that I would expect a young kid to walk out of a Star Wars movie, going, "Wow, that was really cool." And that's I think important for Star Wars because I know that it's appealing not just to us old timers and people who saw the original trilogies and all that. No. It very much wants to capture a new generation. And so one of the reasons why these movies feel a little derivative and a little repetitive is because they are telling you the same basic stories that we loved back in the 70s and 80s. Mm-hmm. They're telling it now for a new generation. They haven't particularly experienced those stories. So I don't mind that. I don't mind if the stories have repeat beats and like, yeah, I've seen that before. You know, that's okay. That doesn't bother me as long as it's the rest of it is entertaining, you know?
Yeah.
I'm like, okay.
I can say that we've had several people who have come with their partners drugged to the Star Wars movie because she likes it, or well, he's into it, I'm not really, and guess what, they're digging it, they're coming out of it going, that was pretty cool. So I really think that that's the that's what they're trying to do is catch a new generation, because we're not going to be here forever. They want Star Wars to last forever. So
yeah. Right. We have to share the love. Otherwise it'll all turn to dust before our tired old eyes. It's not going to rape your childhood. It's not going to, if a movie does that, you've got bigger problems. A movie's not going to destroy your life.
And that's exactly what I was going to say. Let's please encourage all our fans out there and all listeners and everybody. And you encourage your friends. Stop with the Kathleen Kennedy hatred. Stop with the Star Wars bashing. You know, even I, who did not like The Last Jedi at all.
What?
And really looking forward to Rian Johnson's next Star Wars movies. Yeah. You know, I critique the movie for what he gave us. For what that is. But that doesn't mean I hate Rian Johnson and want him to die in a fire. It doesn't mean I hate Kathleen Kennedy. Stop that, guys. Stop it. Because we want more movies like this. We want more fun, great adventure stories. We want space opera movies. So every time you guys take a big piss on it, all you're doing is you're discouraging executives and writers and directors and actors from all getting together and doing the hard work that needs to be done to make one of these movies happen. Right. Why would anybody want to devote that much time, energy, sweat, blood, tears, if the fans are going to be, you guys suck?
Yeah.
You know, sorry. Just be good, guys. Be good.
Love each other and be happy.
Yes. Wow. Go find your Chewbacca.
I like that. Find your Chewbacca.
Yep.
The takeaway for Solo, A Star Wars Story, was be kind to each other. Find your Chewbacca. And have a good time. It's a good fun summer popcorn movie, no doubt.
Totally.
No doubt. And so you know, you'll never have me saying anything really horrible about a Star Wars movie, just because it's a Star Wars movie. Even Rogue One, which I thought, do we really need to see this, was entertaining. And there's a lot to like about it. So yeah. You know, find your Chewie. I like it. Find your Chewie. That's gonna be our Star Wars go through. If people go, oh my god, another Star Wars movie. Hey. Find your Chewie.
There you go.
Nice.
Oh, I love it.
Well, at this point, I think it's only time to say that The Gentleman Nerds is a Cloak and Dagger production and was written by Aaron D'Arrive, Mark Finn, Ben Gibbs, and Joseph Fotinos, with additional material provided by Lawrence Kasdan and Dryden Voss. Music composed and performed by the amazingly talented Ben Gibbs. Promotional material, logos, and The Gentleman Nerds mascot with no name, created by artistic goddess Michelle Fitzpatrick. The Lobot Lounge bouncer is Maximilian, and our special guest bartender was Rio Durant. Thank you, Rio, for arms. That's helpful. Our sound editor, mixer, and intentional producer is Ben Gibbs. Our executive producer, and the man we all pray never, ever, ever gets superpowers, is Aaron D'Arrive. The Gentleman Nerds attorney is Dr. Gonzo. Linda Hunt was the voice of Lady Proxima. John Favreau was the voice of Rio Durant. And Phoebe Waller-Bridge is the voice of L337. Oh, and by the way, Ryan Reynolds provided the voice and facial motion capture for the Juggernaut in Deadpool 2. Mark Farnash is still the man in the gorilla suit. Web hosting by Rustix Interactive. Technical assistance provided by Blythe Christopher D'Arrive. Please join us in the Lobot Lounge when next we open. And please always remember to tip your bartenders and your waitstaff. Final words, Aaron D'Arrive.
Find your Chewie.
Mark Finn.
Yeah, I love the movie. I want more of them. Thanks.
I'm Joseph Fotinos, reminding you all once again that Red Skull lives.
There we go.
Nice.
There we go.
Awesome, guys. Awesome. I'm actually glad that we all kind of agreed that this was pretty good.